Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
We're off and rolling Tuesday, April 15, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on @Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on @CDunning99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
Hello, sir.
How's it going?
It's going great.
It's going all right.
Nervous?
You got some nerves for tonight's game?
Yeah,
I hear you.
I think it makes sense for everybody to have a little bit of nerves.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just say, I think it sort of falls in line with just about every game against the team with a pulse post-trade deadline for the Grizzlies. Expect the worst, hope for the best. 7.5-point dogs tonight on the road in San Fran, the Grizzlies are. That's not a good sign. But they could shock the world. Time to shock the world. We'll talk about that throughout the show. But we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll talk about that off the top. Also, we have Hawks versus Magic tonight in the Eastern Conference play-in game to get to that 7 seed. Plenty to get to there. We have another NBA story that I can't get over. And it has to do with the Dallas Mavericks. Today, Nico Harrison decided that he was going to supposedly clear the air with selected Dallas media members for the first time since the Luka Doncic trade. We'll tell you how that went. As far as guests are concerned, we bring on Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show. And then 6 o'clock per normal every single Tuesday, we bring on Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media. We'll hop into the Blitz right after Christian. Then we'll rewind and we'll get you out. And then we will carry the Grizzlies game starting at 8:30 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. 9 o'clock will be the tip time with Eric Hasseltine. And by the way, to everybody out there who is celebrating, everybody should be celebrating. It's I wish you a happy Jackie Robinson Day. We commemorate on April 15th every single year. We commemorate and honor the day that Jackie Robinson made his Major League debut and broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. It was in 1947. This day in 1947, he broke the color barrier and obviously went on to win Rookie of the Year. So everybody will be wearing 42 tonight. And for baseball, for Major League Baseball, it's a great day of celebration for Jackie Robinson. Now, Connor, today, I'm sure you saw the news coming out of Dallas. Nico Harrison has done a roundtable with selected Dallas media members, so not all Dallas media members, for the first time since the Luka Doncic trade. And with this is probably the most telling thing. The Mavs did not allow cameras or recording devices in the room. They were trying to keep it close to the vest. They said that they could report on what was said in the room by Nico Harrison, responding to the Luka Doncic trade, but they could not record it and then put it out. I find this absolutely despicable, disgusting, and another misstep, tone-deaf, awful decision by what has become, in my estimation, the most idiotic franchise in American sports right now. Not just because of the trade, but everything that followed. You try to make money off Luka's return using his sponsors. You tell Dallas Mavericks fans that they shouldn't be, you know, going after Nico when they're in the crowd. You kick them out of the crowd, even though they had tickets to the game. And now, to try to supposedly clear the air, you invite only your selected few into a room with no recording devices to try to clear the air. And to be honest with you, based on everything I've seen about what Nico Harrison and company said, he didn't clear the air at all. He stuck to his guns. Defense first mindset. We have a chance going into the next couple of seasons to really take advantage of the roster that we have. We think we'll be at the top of the Western Conference. If you stay healthy, sure, but Kyrie Irving has an ACL injury that'll probably linger into next season. AD, oft injured, and he's in his 30s at this point. So, I just, every single day that passes, it feels like the Dallas Mavericks find a way to make even a bigger fool of themselves than they did a couple of months ago when they traded Luka Doncic away to a historic franchise like the Los Angeles Lakers.
Every single time, Nico Harrison, or anybody in the front office or management of the Dallas Mavericks have opened their mouths about this trade, they have somehow found a way to make the worst trade in NBA history, one of the worst trades in sports history, even worse. The quote he gave today about the Dallas Mavericks and fans and taking a shot at Dirk is, in my opinion, one of the worst quotes I've ever seen an executive give. It's absolutely insane. He sounds like a moron. And he might be a moron. I do not understand why they continue to try to justify this trade when it is already obvious that it was the wrong decision. The rest of the season was a disaster for them. They snuck into the play-in. They might win, maybe. Defense is not going to win you a championship this year, though. And guess what? It's not going to win you a championship next year. And your head coach, by the way, has already likened it to the trade of Babe Ruth, which
tried to turn it into a positive too.
86 years of losing followed the Babe Ruth trade for the Boston Red Sox. So, in 86 years, if it works out, the ghost of Nico Harrison will say, "Told you, defense wins championships." It is baffling, and it is why, if I were a Dallas Mavericks fan, my fandom would be over. My fandom would be completely 100%. Over. This is the quote that he gave. "My obligation is to the Dallas Mavericks. Yes. It's what's the best interest of the Dallas Mavericks, and that's the most important thing. Some of those decisions are going to be unpopular. Maybe to Dirk, just not important to Dallas at all. And maybe to the fans, also not important at all. But my obligation is to the Dallas Mavericks."
That was in response to a question about, do you feel like you have an obligation to the fans?
If your obligation is to the Dallas Mavericks, then why are you actively making them worse with every decision that you make? Because I think that people forget, it wasn't just the Luka trade. You also traded Quentin Grimes for Caleb Martin, and that hasn't worked out either. We are going to look back at it, and I think we might say this is the worst performance anybody has ever had in an NBA trade deadline.
Yes.
And he's taking a coward's way out,
That's what I was going to say. You know, what they proved to me today, the Mavericks organization and Nico Harrison, is not only are they stupid, idiotic, for making the trade they did, and all of the nonsense that followed, the tone deafness that followed, but they're also cowardly. They're a bunch of cowards. If you're going to do this right. What is doing it right? You have a press conference after the season, in front of everybody, in front of cameras, in front of microphones, so it can be played back. But you picked the guys that you thought would be nicer to you along the way, brought them into one room, shut off all of their cameras, all their recording devices, and doubled, tripled, quadrupled down on the same things that you said at the trade deadline. It's stupid and cowardly. That's not a good mix. That's the type of mix that makes you lose hold of a franchise and your fan base. Not that they already didn't lose their fan base by making the trade in itself, but you lost even more. And getting them back at this point with all of the missteps you have made, to me, is going to be impossible. The chances of actually going and getting people back on board with this version of the Dallas Mavericks, it's just going to be an insurmountable battle issue that they're dealing with for years to come.
I think it's also insane that he pretended as if there was a possibility that Luka wasn't going to sign a Supermax. Just for everybody out there, in case you didn't know, not a single NBA player has ever turned down a Supermax. Yeah. Not once. Never happened.
Yeah, and his quote
and so
was,
the guy
well,
that was crying.
He said there was no guarantee he would have signed
yeah,
a Supermax.
Yeah, the guy that was crying on his return to Dallas, that guy wasn't going to re-sign the Supermax.
The guy that said he thought he was going to play his entire yeah. career in Dallas. He wasn't going to sign
stupid.
A Supermax.
Stupid and cowardly.
Oh, God.
Because you thought he was too fat. He liked beer. Okay, great. He dropped 45 on you in his return, and your entire arena was cheering for him and wearing Lakers jerseys, including
while
your
you,
name on
while
it.
While you stood behind security detail in the tunnel of your stadium, of American Airlines Arena.
I cannot even imagine what it would feel like to be a Dallas Mavericks fan while all this is happening. It would completely ruin my fandom. I would be an NBA free agent now.
Yeah.
I would have to go find another team, and I'd probably follow Luka. I would probably be like, I'm a Lakers fan as long as Luka's there.
Yep.
It's absolutely insane. I saw someone try to say, what in Grizzlies history, who would it have been like the Grizzlies trading? All four of the core four at the same time. That's what it would be like. It would be like if Chris Wallace woke up one day and said, all four of them get traded at the same time.
I have no need for this. Let's get them out. Let's get them out of here. Let's get a bunch of draft picks and get a haul in return. That's what it would be like. I think that's pretty fair. It's just stupid. Stupid.
Because it's not
cowardly.
Just this year. You traded your future away.
Yeah. And you gave again
for Anthony Davis.
I think the example that I gave of the Lakers being the 75-year-old with a pacemaker in their heart and they needed a heart transplant. You're a 25-year-old man with a lot of life to live, a healthy heart, healthy diet, you work out regularly. You pulled your heart out of your chest and gave it to the 75-year-old man so he could live to fight another day. Just it's pure insanity,
and
it will never make sense to me. No matter what happens from this point forward, it just will never make sense.
And I can't believe he took a shot at Dirk. That's insane. Taking a shot at Dirk Nowitzki, the Dallas Maverick. You're taking a shot at that guy. What are you doing?
I don't.
And that's why, like, this whole he's taking a fall for the owner crap. No, he's not.
Doesn't
no,
it,
he's not.
Doesn't it? It feels like. And this is why
it's two idiots in a room saying exactly to each
this,
other.
This is why I think all the conspiracy theories about ownership and being in the city of Dallas, like this is why people buy into them, because it feels like a purposeful tank. It feels like a purposeful sort of, you know, just making your team worse for the hell of it. That's what it feels like. And then alienating your fans for feeling the way they do. Alienating former players for feeling the way they do about the way you have gone about this. The guys that bled, sweat, and cried for that franchise to go win championships, you're alienating them. It's the equivalent of the Grizzlies alienating the core four. The Lakers alienating Magic Johnson and talking bad about Kobe Bryant. It just doesn't happen until now.
It's also very funny that he's saying defense wins championships when Luka just lit him up for 45 points in his own building.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Great. How's that defense playing?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Kyrie was out. Yeah, we know that Kyrie, the amazing defender that Kyrie Irving is. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Yep, 100%. All right, now moving on to tonight, we do have the 7-seed play-in game between the 7 and the 8 in both the Eastern and Western Conference. The Hawks and the Magic will play at 6:30. The Grizzlies and the Warriors at 9 o'clock. I have talked myself into the Grizzlies having an opportunity to shift momentum pretty heavily tonight if they're able to win this game.
Absolutely.
Now, are they going to win this game? Are they going to shift momentum? Completely different conversation. Any team that's been ahead of them in the Western Conference so far this year in the standings, they are 6-19 against those teams. So the likelihood of them being able to win this game, shift momentum as a 7.5-point dog, history from this season tells you Not very likely. But the opportunity is there, and I guess that's all you can ask for at this particular moment in time. The Grizzlies fell from 2-8 in the Western Conference in the span of 2 months. They finished the season miserably. So I guess if you win tonight, we can think good thoughts heading into a series against the Houston Rockets. I'm not betting on it, but that's what I've talked myself into.
The Grizzlies have a shot tonight. They absolutely do. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. It's going to come down to the big three. How do they show up? Can all of them score 20-plus? Can all of them score 23-plus? Can one of them give you 30? That's what it's going to come down to. Is Ja going to have the performances against the Warriors that we've seen him have, that we know he can have? We know that the team's going to be fired up. Can Jaren stay out of foul trouble? Can Bane take and make threes? That's what it's going to come down to. Yep. It's going to come down to the big three. And if they show up, the Grizzlies will have a chance to win tonight's game. If one of them has a bad game, they're probably not going to win. Unless the other one has like 40, which is just hard to predict, especially against a team like the Warriors who have been playing good defenses as of recent.
Although John Morant did drop 36 in the last game against the Warriors, to be fair.
Yeah. Did they win that game?
They lost. But he dropped 36.
Thank you.
So getting to a 40 ball is a possibility
sure.
tonight.
They lost that game, though.
Guarantee a win to my that's sort of the point I was trying to make. It was a little bit of a counterpoint.
If all of them can score 20 plus, you will have a shot to win this basketball game. Then you'll need somebody like Santi Aldama to step up. How's Zach Edey going to look? Because you know that the Warriors are going to try to put him into action. They're going to try to get switches on him. We know he can struggle a little bit when he gets switched onto a smaller guard. And guess who they have? They have a guy named Steph Curry. It's going to be really difficult to beat them, but it is fully possible for the Grizzlies. We've seen them do it before in a play-in game. We've seen them do it before this season. They put a 50 ball on him this season at one point. They can beat the Golden State Warriors, but they are a different Warriors team now. Jimmy Butler has changed the look of that team. They are more defense. Their defense is much better. Who's going to defend Kuminga? He's going to be an X factor if he can give it a go. There's some rumor that he might be a little bit injured, but it sounds like he's going to be able to give it a go.
He got a DNP in the final game of the year against
Clippers. So if he's able to get in there, he's going to be interesting to see. I know Jimmy Butler is a little banged up. He got hurt in their last game, but it seems like he's going to be fine too. But it's just, I don't necessarily expect the Grizzlies to win, but I think that they have a real shot. But it's just, we say it a lot, basketball is a simple sport. If your big three shows up, you have a chance. If one of them has a bad game, you do not. And to be honest, that one person is going to be Jaren Jackson Jr. He is your matchup nightmare for the Golden State Warriors. He is the guy that if he has a big game, can change the future of the Memphis Grizzlies for the rest of this season. If he doesn't show up, if he is in foul trouble, they're not going to be able to win. If Jaren is not on the floor, they are not going to be able to beat the Warriors.
Yep, very much the case. And keeping Jaren on the floor does require some help from the other players on the floor with him at the same time. Because I think Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zach Edey have gotten into foul trouble because they have to help way too much when guys get blown by. I love how, and to be fair, I agree with you. I want to say that ahead of time. I agree with you. If you can get the big three into that 20-plus point mark, one of them goes for 30. If that's John Morant, you're going to have a chance to win this game, just like they did on April 1st as we started this month. But I think really what it comes down to, because April 1st showed us this, they're going to have to find a way to play better defense than they have since the damn All-Star break.
For sure.
I know people have given up on that idea because it hasn't looked any different. They haven't had time to practice. Tomas Isolo is not by any stretch of the imagination some defensive guy. He's very much an offensive coach. That's what he's going to drill in practice. But if they can find a way to limit the Golden State Warriors' three-point ability, they will have a chance to win this game in the fourth quarter. It requires you to do what you did the time before April 1st that you played them. And the December 19th loss that the Warriors took at the hands of the Grizzlies, I know Jalen Wells did a really good job on Steph Curry. I know that they had a really good defense at that moment. We were feeling really good about where they were at. But in that game, if you'll remember, Steph Curry had 2 points, 0 for 7 from the field, 0 for 6 from 3. He was a minus 41 in 24 minutes. Got played off the floor. All the backups came in the fourth quarter. I'm not saying you have to do that, but split the difference at least. somewhere between 2 and 52 points. Don't let him do what he did to you at the beginning of this month, and I feel a lot better about your chances to win. I know I'm going out on a limb there. I know I'm giving some great hashtag analysis. Don't let Steph Curry drop 52 and you'll have a chance to win the game. But that is how I feel. We can talk about the big three getting to 20 points, putting up a good offensive performance. Based on what Tomas Isolo has done for Ja Morant and this team offensively since he's taken over, I feel okay about their offensive output. But defensively, they just have to be better. And that is going to be the difference in the game. That's the X factor.
Yeah, it's going to be very – the two strategies for the team, like the Warriors are going to be saying, make somebody else other than Ja Morant beat us, and the Grizzlies are going to say, make somebody else besides Steph Curry beat us. That is going to be the strategy for both teams going into it. And it is a bit frustrating because in that game where they had 52, one of the players that was a huge factor was Jalen Wells. Another one was Jake LaRavia. And you just don't have those two guys tonight. And that is not great because they help you on the perimeter. Jalen Wells was arguably your best defender on the perimeter left on this team. Because Vince Williams Jr., as much as I love him, he just hasn't been that this year. And that is why tonight I'm going to be really curious who they have on Steph as his primary defender. Are they going to start with Vince? Probably. We'll see how that looks. Maybe you'll throw Bane on him a little bit because Bane's a better defender than he gets credit for. Certainly, it's probably not going to be Ja. I don't expect Ja to be on him. I think that Scottie Pippen Jr. could get a big run tonight.
He's probably your best perimeter, been your best perimeter defender without Jalen Wells on the floor.
Now, yeah, he probably is the best one that you have left. It's going to be interesting to see. That's why I don't really know what to necessarily expect from the Grizzlies tonight because, like you said, there have been moments where the offense does look a lot better, but then there's moments like the final 5 minutes of the game against the Nuggets where you're like, oh, this offense can't do anything right now.
Yeah, and that's when that type of offense with all of the you know, ball screens for Ja Morant going, you know, pre-Taylor Jenkins, 13 ball screens for Zach Edey to 30 after. That's where those final minutes, it comes back to bite you, especially in playoff basketball when we get forced into the half court. So how are they going to be able to sort of mesh, meld, figure out what to do in those crucial moments late in the game? Do you give Jaren Jackson Jr. a chance at an ISO? I think that's a better plan going forward than just letting the Warriors and Draymond Green, who's very good at picking out what other teams do on the offensive end, letting him just sit back and understand that Ja Morant's going to get a high ball screen and try to go get to the hoop and find somebody open. I mean, it's you have to switch it up as you get later into the game. And that's one thing, and I haven't really had this conversation with you, but I want to have it right now. Offensively, I have gotten the sense, visibly, that Tomas Isolo's offense has looked better, right? Like, I think most of us feel that throughout at least three and a half quarters of a basketball game. Tomas Isolo's offense has looked a little bit cleaner. It's gotten Ja Morant going, got Zach Edey going, all that good stuff. But also, when you look at the statistics, pre-Taylor Jenkins firing and post-Taylor Jenkins firing, the offensive output's just about the same. Same percentages from three, same points per game just about, same three-point makes per game, same attempts. All of that has stayed relatively similar. So the question I've been asking myself and I've been asking of other people, is, are my eyes lying to me to a certain extent about the way the offense has looked? And it's easy to understand why I'm asking that question, because for the longest time this year, the narrative was Taylor Jenkins isn't maximizing Ja. He's not maximizing Zach Edey. And who has the ball in their hands most of the time when they're on the floor? Ja Morant. If that guy gets maximized and has 30 points per game, of course it's going to look better out there on the floor. But I think there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors there where maybe my eyes are lying to me a little bit more than I'm used to, considering what it was previously.
Yeah, I don't think you're incorrect. It's when you were watching a game, growing up, forever basketball, high pick and roll has been one of the mainstays of basketball, especially in the NBA. So when you're watching a game and you recognize that over and over again, to hear you're like, okay, they're running the offense, Ja looks great, Edey has looked better. So your star player looks better, but I don't think there's any way to argue that it's been a perfect transition, because when you look at someone like Jaren Jackson Jr., you're saying, well, his production's gone down.
Yep.
When you look at somebody like Luke Kennard, you say, well, his production's gone down. Jalen Wells' production went down before he was injured. It's
Santi Aldama.
Santi's production went down.
Here's his last six games of point totals. 9-9, 11-5-8.
Not great.
That's the last five
games. That's not going to get it done. It is why all season the main conversation that we were having about this team in the offense was the answer isn't going back to just pick
and roll. It's not reverting.
It's finding a middle ground between the two. I understand the argument of you've got to maximize your star player in John Morant. You've got to make sure that your rookie center, who can be an impact because of how big he is, feels comfortable within this offense. You have figured out how to do that with the two of them in the TI era. However,
yeah.
The rest of the team is not performing at the same level that they were. Now, I think some of that is because you don't have Jake LaRavia anymore. I think that is one of the things. He made your offense look better. People wanted to scapegoat him all season. He was a good player for you. He was a winning basketball player for you. He'd make this team better right now. I think that's one reason. Jalen Wells was also in a slump that started way before the Jenkins firing. So I think that was one of the factors as well. You lost Brandon Clark. That's going to make your offense look a little less fluid as well. And then Luke Kennard also has been odd. But I think a lot of that is because of the offense. So they've got to find a way. And I don't know if you can do that the rest of the season. It's going to be one of those off-season things where, okay, we had a lot of success with the free-flowing offense. Not all of it worked because it didn't maximize a few of our players. Now, the pick and roll doesn't maximize a few of our players as well. We've got to find a middle ground for that. That's something that you have to do in training camp. That's something that you have to do over the offseason.
In practice,
you're not going to have time to do that before your play-in game against the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
It would be unfair to expect them to come out and be like, oh, it's the perfect melding of the two tonight.
Yeah, right.
That's just not going to.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, You can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Happen. But that needs to be a priority for this team. They've got to figure out personnel first off that's going to fit this system. You've got to make sure that you have the right coach in place. If it is T.I. moving forward, great. I like him. I do think a lot of things look good. He seems like the type of guy that would quote unquote hold the team accountable, whatever that really means. I like him. But you've also, I think a lot of it's personnel though. Like if you had Brandon Clark, if you had a wing player like Jake LaRavia, it would look better than it has. But to your point, you've got to make sure that somebody like Jaren Jackson Jr. is also comfortable in this offense. You can't just say, oh, well, Ja's looking a lot better, so everything's great. I was like, no. Well, what about the guy that's been carrying you all season, that was having an all-NBA season,
you're
who
gonna
all of a
need
sudden
him,
has faded into the background a
whether,
little bit?
Whether it's this year or years to come, you're going to need that guy, number 13, to be maximizing possessions at the end of games.
Yeah,
you're going to need that as well. You need other answers besides let's run a high pick-and-roll right. ball screen for Ja Morant.
Well, because one of the big complaints that people had this season about this offense was, well, you were regulating Ja Morant to standing in the corner a lot, or just kind of standing there a lot. Well, guess what you've done to Jared? You've done
the same thing
to him. And that is why you've got to find this middle ground between the two. Listen, running 13 pick and rolls a game, not great. Got to be more than that. Running 30-plus a game, maybe not the answer.
Right. Don't like, double it and then plus some.
Right. Like, maybe we can find somewhere in the middle and run that amount of pick and rolls and still have the free throw in the offense and still make sure that Jaren gets his
ISO moments.
Split the difference
somewhere around 20, 21, 22, right. something like that.
I mean, in April, Jaren has been averaging 19 points per game. We know he's better than that. He was all season, he was better than that. It's not a coincidence that all of a sudden, when they came in and started running more pick and roll, all of a sudden Jaren's points per games went down. All of a sudden his shots went down. That's not a coincidence. He wasn't as comfortable. He was having to take more threes. And listen, Jaren's a good three-point shooter. He's not a great one. You don't want him to be taking the majority of his shots from three. And that's kind of what happened. That's what we've seen in April. He's been taking the majority of his shots from three. And that is not going to lead to success
that's
for the
something
Grizzlies.
We've seen throughout his career.
Get to
when
the mid-range.
Look at it, when you look at his shot chart, getting to the rim, taking advantage of mismatches, using his athleticism against bigs that can't move their feet as well, that's where he thrives.
And the Golden State Warriors, I saw the stat today, they give up the most mid-range shots in the NBA. So tonight, if the Grizzlies don't fall in love with the three, which is one of the reasons they lost that game against the Nuggets, the amount of settle threes they took was driving me insane, especially in the early shot clock. Sati needs to have a rule. If you take a shot from three within the first
shot
2 seconds
has to be
of a shot
15
clock,
seconds
yes.
for you
yeah.
to take a
yeah.
three.
Sit down, brother. You can't. That can't happen. He does it so many times. So many bad shots from Sati as of recent. If Ja can get to the mid-range, if Jaren can get to the mid-range, if Bane can get to the mid-range and cook them there, that is how this team has success. And then you will need Bane to hit some threes. You'll need Luke to hit a couple threes. And then Sati, brother, just don't take it with 23 on the shot clock. Then you can fire it up. If they can just have live in the mid-range tonight, live around the rim, and then use the three when you can and don't force it, that's how you can win the game tonight.
Now, on the Jaren Jackson Jr. conversation, all NBA, his case has been made. Everything that he can could have done has been done at this moment. So is he going to make it? Is he not going to make it? And if he doesn't, if he does, how is that going to affect the Grizzlies? I want to have that discussion when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back rolling on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All NBA votes are starting to roll in, and I think the big question here in Memphis is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to ultimately make it? He did get to the 65-game threshold that makes him eligible for the awards. He's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year. It seems like that ship has sailed with a 13-17 finish to the season in the last 30 that the Grizzlies had. But is that 13-17 finish going to hurt his All-NBA odds as well? We shall see. Now, the case for Jaren Jackson Jr. is not that hard to make. This team floated around the top of the Western Conference for most of the year until the very end. Jaren Jackson Jr. is their leading scorer. He's their leading block getter. He is also seventh in the NBA in blocks per game. He's top five in stocks, steals, and blocks per game. He's one of the best defensive players in the entire league, former defensive player of the year. He ultimately will make an all-defensive team, whether it be first or second. So the case is there for him to make all-NBA with all those things said, but ultimately, will he, is the question at this moment. You see a lot of ballots going out. You see guys, you know, showing their hand as to who they voted for. Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer is one of the biggest ones that has posted just about every vote he has cast. And Jaren Jackson Jr. did not make his list on first, second, or third team. Now, the difference between Jaren being on and off is pretty substantial for the Memphis Grizzlies and their way forward. If he does make an All-NBA team, he will get be eligible for a five-year $345 million supermax deal that will tie him to the Grizzlies for an extended period of time. If he does not, it's a four-year $229 million deal. Now, other people out there would say that's not too shabby. It's okay if he doesn't make the All-NBA team. That gives the Grizzlies maybe a little bit more flexibility. You can have a little bit more cap space. You're not dealing with that $345 million insane contract. But it still is a lot of money to keep Jaren tied to this franchise for four more years. Now, I do think it's interesting in the fact that the Grizzlies, if he does make the All-NBA team, they're the only team that can offer him a supermax deal of 5 years, $345 million. If he does not make an All-NBA team, that four-year, $229 million contract can be offered by just about anybody around the NBA after he gets done with his deal next year. So, I obviously, it could be good for the Grizzlies, but there is the thought out there, Connor, that it could be a risk in the fact that you may lose a little bit of leverage with Jaren Jackson Jr. in his return to the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know how concerned I am about Jaren not signing a max extension to stay with the Grizzlies at this particular moment. It feels like he likes it in Memphis. Feels like he's good with the community. He's got his roots down here. But at the same time, there is a little bit of risk involved with him not making an All-NBA team, even though that's out of the Grizzlies' control, because other teams can ultimately offer him that same deal.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of people kind of freaking out today about it. I'm pretty far from being panicked over whether or not I think Jaren Jackson Jr. would want to stay in Memphis. I still think that the Grizzlies would hold some leverage over the rest of the NBA with Jaren Jackson Jr. And to your point, though, it is tough that it feels like the Grizzlies don't have any control over whether he gets the most money. And the thing is that the Grizzlies will still be able to offer Jaren Jackson Jr. more money than any team in the NBA. They'll still have that leverage to have. They'll still say, okay, Jaren, we can offer you, it may not be the supermax, but we can still offer you more money than anybody else can in the NBA. We want you to be here in Memphis. We believe that you're a part of this core moving forward. Would you like to re-sign? I just don't really see a scenario in which Jaren Jackson Jr. says no to that. And I think if we're being honest, Jaren Jackson Jr. should be an All-NBA player based on the season.
Yes. The end is the problem.
However, the last month and a half since Jaren had that ankle injury, he hasn't been playing at an All-NBA level. And that is why I have some fear that he may be left off. Because whether we like it or not, NBA media is extremely reactionary. And they have recency bias in their votes all the time. And to be quite honest, there are some people with votes that should not have votes that put some really ridiculous things on there that does directly impact money. I've never really been comfortable with votes impacting people's money. I don't like how those two things are tied together. I hope that at some point, maybe with the new CBA, that goes away, because a narrative can completely change the outlook, not only for a player, but for a franchise moving forward. And I just don't like that at all. Like this whole Draymond defensive player of the year thing that came up in the last few weeks.
Ridiculous.
Like, what are we doing? This doesn't make any sense. This is just narrative-based. He shouldn't be defensive player of the year. The person that was pushing it, by the way, is now all of a sudden saying that Lou Dort was his pick for it's like, what are we doing? It's some people should not have votes, especially when you have it tied to money. It should be people that are locked in, that pay attention, and aren't going to use their own inherent biases against these players. And unfortunately, that's just not what we're going to see. But when it comes to Jaren, I think that everybody needs to just pump the brakes a little bit. I have really seen some people today freaking out over the possibility that Jaren Jackson Jr. may not get this Supermax. We're all rooting for it. I want him to get that money. I think he's earned it. But I would also be sitting here lying to you if I said that I expect him to be all NBA after the last month and a half.
Yes, I think there's other guys that have lapped him in this conversation to a certain extent. And there's other bigs that are, I think will rise a little bit higher than
Zubac
him based on the end of the year. And I think Ivica Zubac is probably sort of the biggest one you could look at right there. But Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer left him off. I think there's a lot of other voters on these awards that will likely leave him off. Now, with that, though, I don't think it's the end of the world by any stretch of the imagination. Of course, I mentioned the inherent risk with him not getting that, but at the same time, it does save the Grizzlies a lot of money. The difference between 5 years, $345 million, and 4 years, $229 million is pretty damn substantial, and it will help you have a little bit more flexibility when it comes to ads, trades, whatever you do in the offseason. If there's free agents you like, if somebody else named Santi Aldama, for example, that you need to extend coming up this offseason, I think it helps you find the flexibility to go make that happen. But you have to get Jaren's pin on that paper for 4 years, $229 million, if he doesn't make All-NBA before you worry about any of those other things.
Because they'll still be able to offer Jaren a max level extension. Now, if he doesn't make All-NBA, I think that you can basically look at a player like John Conchar and be like, all right, brother, thanks, but your time here is up because we need that money now. And they'll probably have to move off of him or one of these cost-controlled players they'll have to move off of. One of the reasons they dumped Marcus Smart, even though we disagreed with the reasoning behind it and, you know, selling this season really for making sure that
they needed some flexibility this offseason.
They needed some flexibility. You're going to have expiring money. It's going to probably be more difficult to bring back a guy like Luke Kennard if you have to try. It's just there are some things that they can do this offseason if Jaren doesn't make that All-NBA team to still give him an enticing max-level extension offer. Now, on the flip side of that, Jaren could also say, well, maybe I'll try to go for All-NBA next season. Maybe I'll win Defensive Player of the Year next season. Let's see what happens. That is what you don't want to happen. But again, I think it is going to be very difficult for a player to turn down a max level extension if he gets
when
that.
When it's on the tape.
We just have to hope that Jaren decides that Memphis is where he wants to be for the long term. And even though it's not a super max, he still looks at that money and says, yeah, that's an offer that I can't refuse.
And if I'm being honest with you, what do I think if he has a contract for 4 years, $229 million in front of his face this offseason? What do I think he'll do with that? I think he'll sign it. That's my thought. I don't know exactly what's going on in Jaren Jackson Jr.'s brain. I don't know what his agents are telling him, what his people are telling him. But at the same time, to your point, I think it's really hard to deny that money when it is right there and it's a possibility.
I haven't understood. I've seen, for instance, somebody like Sam Quinn. He's put it out there and he's
from CBS Sports.
Yeah,
by the way.
And he's kind of alluding to the fact that Memphis wouldn't have leverage if Jaren doesn't get a Supermax extension. I'm like, no. They can still offer him more money than any other team in the NBA. The Grizzlies would still have leverage. It comes down to whether or not Jaren believes he would make All-NBA next season, or if Jaren believes he can win Defensive Player of the Year.
I think where Sam Quinn went wrong, and I saw what you were talking about, it's just a little less leverage than a five-year, $345 million that only the Grizzlies can offer him.
Right.
That's the only difference. It's a little less leverage. They still have leverage in this situation with the amount of money they can give him on a max contract. But it is what it is. They're still going to have to do some things this offseason. And there's a couple of thoughts out there. One, they could get some outside help, which is what I hope they do. But the other thing is, okay, maybe G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., guys like that can step up to the table, not be injured, and they can give you what you expected them to give you in the 24-25 season. G.G. Jackson, though, I think is one of the biggest keys going forward for this franchise. He's 20 years old. He's got an unbelievable skill set. But let's not fake it. He struggled this season, man. He struggled mightily. And I'll say it's not all his fault. by any stretch of the imagination. But here are the facts of G.G. Jackson's season. 37% from the field. He had the worst defensive rating than any regular rotation player not named Luke Kennard. The Grizzlies were actually 7.4 points better on defense with G.G. Jackson off the court as opposed to him on the floor. He had a team worst net rating, by the way, of minus 5.9. His differential, too, when he was off the floor, the Grizzlies were actually 12 points better with G.G. Jackson off the floor than on the floor. All that to be said, I want to be clear. I'm still pretty bullish on G.G. I don't want anybody to misconstrue what I'm saying. His skill set is unbelievable. He can score. He can fill it up. He has the at least, you know, physical attributes to be a passable defensive player. He has some optionality if he ever finds his way on the defensive side of the ball. And he's 20 years old. But the point I'm trying to make is all of these things, especially for a 20-year-old, a guy as young as G.G. Jackson, it can weigh on you. And yesterday, I want to give Matt Enfield credit because he did sort of ask, and he's from Action News 5. He asked G.G. Jackson about his experience this season and sort of what he thought, how he was feeling. And G.G. Jackson, I thought, gave a pretty good answer. First takeaway, Mr. Kellerman. I think he's talking about Zach Kleiman, GM of the Memphis Grizzlies. Mr. Kellerman. Okay, we're going to have to learn that first. We're gonna have to learn how to pronounce Zach Kleiman's name. But I will say this. There's a lot to love about the kid from a skill set point of view. I think the most important thing, though, like based on what the way he talks to the media, how he presents himself, I do think he's got a relatively level head on his shoulders. He seems to be somewhat self-aware. To be honest, though, I have heard some things about him behind the scenes. When you hear things like that, it becomes hard to believe, like what he just said yesterday to the media and to Matt Enfield. But some of the things you do hear behind the scenes, a little immature, got a little pouty this year, a little bit tough to work with at times. And you heard that out of South Carolina. I think it depends on who you ask in this city about G.G. Jackson. You know, those things, those types of tropes that have been following him for a while. But, you know, I look at G.G. Jackson. I look at the answers, the measured answers he seems to give to the media for the most part. I feel like there's a nice runway for him to still make something happen in a Grizzlies uniform. This year did not go according to plan. But I think going into the future, I'm still, like I said, relatively bullish on what he can provide this team.
Yeah, I still think that G.G. has a chance to be a very successful player in the NBA. Like you said, he's still one of the youngest guys in the league. And this offseason, and this season as a whole, is almost a lost one for G.G. And unfortunately, it came at a really bad time for the actual team because you were hoping that he could be not necessarily like an every-night rotation guy, but somebody that could have an impact for you. And he just wasn't. He had a bad season. And I think it's okay to say that. He just had a bad season. That doesn't mean he's a bad player. Just means he had a bad season. I do think, though, what it does, this offseason, very important for the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Got to find somebody. If GG's the price, you got to pay it. Yeah. I think that's what this season probably showed, where, okay, GG might be a little bit further away than we thought he was after last year. The defense is a real thing, and yes, that foot injury has a major impact on his development. There's no doubt about it. But when he came in, the team was asking him to do one thing, to play defense. We knew he could score. We've seen that before. We knew he could score. Hey, man, you've got to play defense, and he just wasn't doing it. I don't know if it was from ability. I don't know if it was from study. I don't know what it was, but every time he was in there, he's getting cooked. And yes, I understand that somebody like Luke Kennard isn't the best defender. I understand that Santi isn't the best defender. But if you're watching those games, and we're being honest about it, he was by far the worst defender on the court.
And the stats show it.
The eyeball test shows it. The stats show it. He has got to improve there. That is what this offseason needs to be for G.G. He has got to figure out the defensive end. And if he doesn't do that, it's going to hold him back in his career. But again, he's a very young player. He has the talent. He seemingly has the work ethic. I think he can do it, but he needs a full offseason of doing nothing but defense. Hopefully he can get in a gym with somebody like Tony Allen or something to help figure out that end of the court. because we've seen the flashes on offense. And he had a couple nights where he struggled shooting and this, that. But I'm not worried about his offense. I'm worried about his defense because it wasn't just bad. It was lost.
Yeah.
And those are two different things. If it was, you know, Luke Kennard, bad at defense. Santi can be bad at defense. But they're not lost. They still try to stay in front of the guy. They're still usually kind of in the right spot. They're just, they get blown by. Gigi was lost. Guys were, he wasn't near his defenders. He was leaving wide open threes constantly. He wasn't switching when he needed to.
Right.
That was the issue.
I think the problem is, like, you split defense into on-ball and off-ball defense.
Right.
Right.
His off-ball.
And a guy like Luke Kennard, for example, on-ball defense is miserable because he doesn't have the athleticism, the gumption, the side-to-side movement to stay in front of good matchups, good players out there on the perimeter. G.G. Jackson, to me, has that ability, but what you saw with him pretty consistently, he was late on rotations, he was out of place, and his off-ball defense was the big struggle. Luke Kennard, on the other hand, is a guy who, again, not good when you put him one-on-one in an ISO situation against a good player on the perimeter, but most of the time he's going to be in the right spot, doing the right things, closing out on three-point shooters when you get him out there on the perimeter. So I think that, you know, G.G. Jackson, he struggles with on-ball and off-ball defense, but the off-ball defense was the thing that really stood out to me. He was just lost consistently out there on the defensive end of the floor. And I do think the point you made about, hey, if this offseason there's somebody out there that presents itself, G.G. Jackson, let's be honest, he still has a fair amount of value on the open market. He's 20 years old. He was on the all-rookie team a year ago.
Good contract.
He's on a really good contract. It's valuable to other teams around the NBA. If there is a deal out there, you have to listen. You can't just assume that G.G. Jackson is going to be on this team going into next year. And based on the way he had his tone going there, I think he has an idea. Not that he's going to be traded, but anything is on the table for him after this year and the way it went.
Yeah, that being said, you know, I think that his quote was a mature one because he talked about how the mental health of sports is a big deal. And when you're having a tough season, it can weigh on you. It can impact your game night to night, you know, getting sent down to the G League, which was probably something he didn't really expect to have to do after his injury resignment. He was probably like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be back from injury. I'm going to be with the team. He talked about how, like, he was telling guys, you know, just wait till I'm back. Just wait till I'm back. I'm having an impact. And it was just the exact opposite of that. If he was having an impact, it was really a negative one more than anything on the court. I'm not saying his personality or in the locker room or anything like that. But on the court, he wasn't having a positive impact at all for the Grizzlies. So, you know, I hope that this offseason he is able to figure it out and can bounce back and have a good season next year. If he's a part of the Grizzlies, that's going to be great. I'll be rooting for him. Hopefully he can have an impact. Hopefully he puts that defense together. If they have to pay the price of Gigi, though, to go find that wing player that puts this thing together, then that's what they're going to have to do.
If you stick with Gigi another year and you continue to try to, you know, put his development out there on the forefront, you are making another bet that he's going to be a guy that eventually turns into a good role player for
sure.
You. And I got to be honest with you, Connor. I think we're at the point with this big three, with this window, where I think fans, I think that Zach Kleiman's probably getting to this point. You're tired of making these bets and hoping they work out. Because this year, you made a ton of bets that did not come to fruition, whether it was Vince, Jalen Wells post All-Star break, G.G. Jackson, getting rid of Zach of
Marcus
Jake Laravia and Marcus Smart. You made a ton of bets that just did not work out in your favor. I think the Grizzlies need to look for a more sure thing going into the future.
100%.
Because up to this point, you focused on internal development. It seems like, you know, at some point for every organization, you have to decide what you want to do, when you want to do it. And it feels like the time is now.